On today's episode of The Poolside Genius, we take a look at the success or lack thereof of the new NFL coaching hires. We look at coaches that are going to find themselves in the hot tub. We also look at the clash of the coaching titans. We look at Jeff Fisher versus John Fox in the announce booth. Then we take on some Poolside Genius call-ins. Remember that you can call in using the Anchor app, and that will allow you to talk to us and ask us questions and give us feedback on the show. And if you have a great question, you'll find it answered on our next episode of The Poolside Genius. Enjoy the show.
This is Poolside Genius, where we always make a splash.
We're going to transition to professional football, and we're going to go around the table and evaluate the new head coaching hires for the 2018 upcoming NFL season. And each of us are going to take a team or two and give some thoughts and opinions on whether it will be a dumpster fire train wreck or whether it has a chance to really succeed. And we're going to start with Cody, and he's going to talk about a couple teams that he wants to really see do well or really poorly. There's no middle ground with him.
Yeah, definitely not. By the way, none of us are going to acknowledge Steve Wilks at the Arizona Cardinals just because, well, it's not interesting at all. Anyway, I'm going to first go with the premier, the marquee name of the hiring season for the last, like, 10 years, and that is John Gruden from the Oakland Raiders. All right, so John Gruden here. You know, part of me wonders, does this guy really want to coach? You know, we hear about his desire, how much he loves football, but it took $100 million over 10 years to get him out of the booth. To me, I wonder how that's going to work out. Another thing that I remember is that when he was with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he was fading towards the last how many years, and a lot of that was because he was gaining more and more control over the roster, and he started getting rid of a lot of the Tony Dungy great Bucs players. Now, he's really in control. You know, they can say, well, Reggie McKenzie's there. Reggie McKenzie, you know, he's the GM. Nah. Gruden's calling the shots. Gruden's in charge. I mean, you know, because guess what? They started jettisoning young players and bringing in old players. You know, Jordy Nelson and some of those guys. Oh, man. Oh, we signed Derek Johnson from the Chiefs. Oh, that's really sticking it to him. Yeah, the Chiefs didn't want him back because he can't run anymore. You know, so I think Gruden, you know, he may have learned a lot. He talked to all the coaches in his FFCA, you know, down there watching all the film. Great, great stuff. But I think that's all going to be window dressing because it's going to end up being a train wreck. Their defense is not going to be good. I think that the old players that he brought in offensively aren't going to be helpful. I think that relying on Marshawn Lynch at this stage of his career and the muscle hamster, I don't really see that going well as well. Jordy Nelson can't really run anymore. I don't know that this is going to be a great fit. I also think that bringing in Tom Cable, you know, one of your marquee hires on your staff is Tom Cable. Again, just ignore I guess you can't really ignore the domestic violence issues and all of that, but what did he do with the Seahawks? I mean, did any of you see anything that made you think this guy is competent?
My gosh, you are really negative on John.
Don't worry. We have 10 years to see how he's going to turn out because guess what? Mark Davis doesn't have the money to be paying two coaches, especially when he's paying Gruden $10 million. So I'm going to say he's going to struggle.
The one good thing he does have is he has Derek Carr. He doesn't have to go out and get an old aging quarterback, which he's done in his whole coaching past.
He's never developed anybody at the quarterback position. You know, he's a quarterback guru, but everybody's, you know, in their 30s by the time they reach him if they're going to have any success.
Is this move to hire Coach Gruden good news for Carr, a push, or bad news for Carr?
Well, I think that they're going to start to move, you know, the scapegoating from that down year last year. You know, they realized, yeah, that was Del Rio, that was Downing. You know, first of all, they got rid of Musgraves the year before. Then they brought in his buddy Downing, you know, that was the quarterback coach. And, you know, now that whole staff is gone. Now when you have Gruden, who, you know, like it or not, people universally think is this offensive guru. you know, the excuses are kind of going away. Now, granted, I think last year a lot of his declines, as people would label it, was due to injury. You know, you had that back injury, and you could tell he just couldn't throw the way he had previously. You know, you have the mercurial Michael Crabtree there. You have, you know, all that going on. I think that's tough. Mari Cooper was dropping balls left and right. You know, so I think they had some tough circumstances coaching wise. But, you know, now the focus, you know, he's the, what, $115 million man? You know, the focus is on Derek Carr. I think that Gruden's definitely going to have a more competent scheme. I think he's a better play caller than Downing was, you know, and we're going to see what exactly that means. I think that Gruden should help him, but guess what? Gruden will turn on him if he starts to not perform up to the level that he wants to.
You know, it's funny. We talked about Chip Kelly and, you know, his constant reincarnations. And did he ever learn anything, and or has he going to, you know, show that he's learned back at UCLA? My question with Gruden, has he learned anything from being out of the coaching realm for, what was it, 10 years? From all of their hires, all of their signings, it certainly doesn't look like he's decided to change things up. He keeps bringing in these older players. The other thing is, I don't think he's really grasped how much the game has changed, especially from a technology standpoint. I don't think he's going to embrace any of that, which I think puts him behind the eight ball.
What do you mean from a technology perspective?
Well, I do remember him coming through, like, in terms of analytics.
Well, you know, we have to sparse that a little bit. You know, when he says, you know, about analytics, football coaches have been doing analytics for, you know, since the beginning of the game. You know, analytics is, okay, how often do they blitz on third down? You know, what are their favorite blitzes here? Like, I think he just called it coaching, and, you know, he made that point where, you know, and he also said, I'm going to throw it back to 98. I think maybe that is more or less talking about having a fullback, you know, some of the personnel things that Kyle Shanahan does, that Sean McVay does. I think it's talking about more personnel groupings than necessarily, you know, being this old stodgy team. But then again, he has, in the personnel realm, gone back to what he always has done.
Which I think goes against him even grasping analytics, because I think in terms of the signings he's brought in, he's gone against what a lot of cutting edge or people that are building these teams are really looking for.
What do you mean? He brought in his son Deuce to be an assistant strength coach. I mean, come on. How isn't that cutting edge?
Okay.
Is there any sign in his staff hires, Cody, that you see that Gruden is giving opportunities to a young, emerging, up-and-coming, next-level type head coach, or is it recycled?
A lot of it's recycled. I mean, I think the D.C. Gunther is very good. But, you know, he brings in his old buddy, Rich Bisaccia, you know, who I think some people speak highly of. He brings in Olsen, his old buddy from Tampa Bay. But then again, Olsen was also with Sean McVay last year, you know, kind of getting that update from the McVay staff, I think, could be helpful. He brought in Edgar Bennett, you know, a guy that I think was viewed much higher a few years ago. But, you know, the tarnish kind of has grown on him, you know, as being a part of that whole underachieving Packers unit. I think that, you know, Tom Cable, again, old guy, like none of these guys are young or emerging, and I think that's by choice. I think Gruden, you know, kind of circled these guys and wants people that fit into what he did. But at Tampa Bay, he also did have periods where he had guys like Shanahan and McVay on his staff, so, you know, maybe he has them in just those kind of guys in much smaller roles. I'm not sure, but, you know, the one thing Chris Sims said is that Gruden noticed the need to pare down his offensive language. Like, he literally was relearning his offense because he was giving them shortened, like, maybe one-word play calls, and he had to relearn it because he knew that the players weren't going to be able to remember the entire West Coast verbiage that he had used before.
That's a good sign, at least looking forward for the future. Another name that's out there, Tennessee Titans went and hired Mike Vrabel, whose resume is probably one of the thinner resumes as a coach. He's inheriting a playoff team. Cody, your thoughts on Vrabel?
I think he's like the high-end version of Mike Singletary. You know, I think he's got some coordinating experiences. I think that, you know, he wasn't quite the player but that Mike Singletary was, but I think he was, you know, they always the smart, gritty, heady player, you know, played for Bill Belichick. You know, that's the whole thing, that mystique that's there. I think that that's, you know, why they wanted him. His defense regressed, you know, and people will say, oh, well, there were injuries. If you're planning on J.J. Watt making it through a whole season anymore, you know, I'm sorry, I hate to tell you that I have some newspaper stock for you as well. I don't see it with Vrabel. Again, they said he was a great recruiter. He's a great position coach. And again, there are a lot of guys that are great position coaches and are great recruiters, like when he was at Ohio State. But I don't see him as being ready. I mean, 1 year as a coordinator is enough. And having a very short resume in terms of coaching in general, that doesn't seem great to me. Again, Dean Pease, pretty good defensive coordinator hire, you know, and, you know, hopefully Rabel's going to be more of a big picture kind of guy, which I think that's probably where he's best suited at this point, motivator, that sort of thing. I like the LaFleur hire as offensive coordinator coming from that Shanahan-McVay system. I think that that's beneficial. Now, would have I liked to have seen them, you know, get Ryan Day like he had talked about and really seen Marcus Mariota with some of that more spread, you know, Oregon type stuff that he had done in college? Yes, that would have been from an entertainment standpoint. I would have liked that. I would have enjoyed that, seeing if, you know, it really could be successful, you know, in that way with Mariota at the NFL level. But I'm not sold on Vrabel. I think this team was a playoff team. I don't think that they really had very good coaching last year. I think Mularkey clearly failed multiple places. I think that his offense was very stodgy. I think the exotic smash mouth or whatever he wanted to call it was weak. I don't think they used Derrick Henry enough. So I think that there's definitely a room for improvement, but I don't know that Mike Vrabel is the answer there. I think they're going to continue to you know, kind of underachieve. You know, you have Mariota, you have some of these good players that they have, Jarrell Casey, you know, some of the safeties and DBs that they have, but I don't think that they'll, you know, get over that mountaintop.
Another Patriots coaching staff refugee, Matt Patricia, was brought in to rescue the Detroit Lions franchise. Reams, your take on Matt Patricia as the next in line of the Bill Belichick coaching tree to the rescue?
I think, like most of Bill's assistants, it might be a struggle, but heck, I was really hoping to give my expertise on Mitch Gall and his head coaching experience. I mean, especially with the great the offensive coordinator, Mr. Bender here. Anyway, Matt Patricia. I think, you know, outside of playing on Thanksgiving, I think it's going to be, you know, the same old with the Detroit Lions. I think, you know, they have plenty of talent on the offensive end. I know you look on that defense. Patricia's obviously a defensive guy. Maybe he tries to shore up some inconsistencies on that end. I know Ziggy Ansah is talking about, you know, is he going to hold out? I'm not sure if he was holding out, but if he's a little upset in terms of his contract. I think that was some news that was out there. You know, with Patricia, I think it's, you know, he was a really good coordinator on a team that, you know, obviously led the AFC. I think moving into the NFC in a team that's going to be, you know, in a improved NFC Central. I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, you're talking about the Vikings, the Packers getting Rodgers back, and an up-and-coming Bears team. I think it's going to be a struggle for the Lions just to compete in that NFC Central.
North.
This isn't hockey now.
Jeez. I'm still in baseball here.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to dive into two hires that kind of I'm very interested to see how they turn out. First will be the latest of the hires, which is the Indianapolis Colts and the looking like they were going to pull the trigger on Josh McDaniels, and then
they did.
And then suddenly, the Bob Kraft and the Patriots backroom corrupt bargain election of 1824 smoking cigars and swindling people. And suddenly, Frank Reich, Maryland's own Captain Comeback, rides to the rescue. And it's probably not one of the most desirable jobs, but there's only so many of them. And inside information, I played for Frank Reich Sr. in college, and what a legendary coach. He also coached at Lebanon High School. So I want to see Frank Reich and the Colts. And I think with his background, with Peterson, and remember, when Peterson put the staff together with the Eagles, it wasn't a collection of guys that were all best friends. That's the interesting thing about that staff that Coach Peterson put together. He brought in guys that he thought were really good coaches, that he had respect for, that he thought were really good teachers, and that's a key point with... And I think Coach Reich, yeah, he's got a lot of NFL experience as a player and a coach, but I think he was didn't get enough credit for what the Eagles were able to achieve. He's not a headline maker. He will not be a guy that will stand up at a podium and win a lot of press conferences, but we've seen in the NFL that sometimes those are the guys that, especially with a rebuilding franchise, he may be the perfect guy for that job.
Do you think that he got scapegoated when he was the OC at San Diego?
Yeah, you tend to think so. Seems to be, it's always difficult when you're an offensive coordinator and your boss is an offensive coach and the offense doesn't go well and the first guy to get the blame is the OC. But I tend to think that it'll be interesting to see, you know, obviously the short-term success of the Colts is tied to how healthy Andrew Luck's throwing arm is and shoulder is. And, you know, will Reich have a chance even if it's not Luck?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, with Luck, is there a bigger state secret? Like, I mean, he's going to be back last year. I mean, he's not going to miss any games. And this whole thing continues to be a big secret, and no one really knows what's going on.
Yeah, it's almost it is almost like it's CIA-level intelligence clearance to get into the Colts complex to find out if Andrew Luck has thrown a Nerf football, if he has thrown a regulation NFL ball, if he actually, in fact, does have a shoulder. And what the trainers are probably, their security clearances, you know, unlike the Trump administration, which is looking to revoke Obama people's security clearances, the training staff of the Colts may have the most sensitive jobs in the NFL in terms of, hey, if I have a conversation with somebody and they ask me about Andrew Luck's health, what do I say? You know,
you never know with the mad Twitter, too.
Well, sure.
As their owner.
Do you think they could be they could sustain it with Brissett?
You know, you'd like to think so. They've really struggled though. Not so much. They couldn't stop anybody for years. When Pagano was there, Pagano was hired as a defensive guy, and they would get into the playoffs, and they would be the worst defensive team that made the playoffs, and they would have to smoke and mirror their way through a game.
You know, last year they had a bunch of games where they were leading into the fourth quarter and their defense just gave it up. I mean, it seems like even since when Manning was there, it's always kind of been their Achilles heel, that inept defense. And at times, you know, with Mathis and Freeney, they were fantastic, but, you know, those days are long gone.
Do you think that was one of the worst situations where they couldn't, you know, I mean, morally, you probably couldn't promote Bruce Arians a few years ago after he was essentially coach of the year when Pagano was out. You know, I feel like it's like one of those things where they really missed out because it seems like Luck's career is kind of
ebbed,
nosedive
yes.
after that.
Do you think it's because Pagano was a defensive guy?
No, it seemed to me that they struggled. They struggled consistently finding the right guy to run the offense, but I don't know if it was because he was a defensive guy. The final team we're going to look at is the Chicago Bears. And the Chicago Bears have a lot of local ties and a lot of interest, at least from my corner, on how the Bears are going to do this year. Their head coach is a Mannheim product, Matt Nagy, who was with the Kansas City Chiefs most recently with Andy Reid. They have an offensive tackle slash guard, Jordan Morgan, who was selected out of Kutztown, that came to Kutztown 2011, I want to say, recruited really based on one of our coaches, Ray Unuzzi, running into him in a weight room in Philadelphia and having no football experience. And now he's an NFL lineman. And I was just texting a friend of mine who's on the staff of the Bears, who's an intern this camp, and asking him just some questions about the Bears. And very eclectic staff that Nagy has put together, probably one of the most interesting staffs. And it does remind you a bit of Doug Peterson in terms of pulling guys, old, young, new, college. For example, defensive coordinator Vic Fangio pretty much inherited, kept his job, Jim Harbaugh guy. Offensive coordinator Mark Helfrich, really though, from what I'm hearing, offensive coordinator name only. Nagy's going to be the guy running the offense, so do not expect to see Oregon Duck schemes. It's going to be a West Coast offense show, is what we hear. I ask about Mitch Trubisky, and the expectation was, hey, Trubisky, you know, he's everybody kind of thought maybe he's got a little bit of an edge to him, but seems to be well-liked by the coaches, seems to be really well-liked by the players, has a chance to be the franchise quarterback that the Bears want.
He had a pretty solid first season. I think their whole team pretty much lies on his shoulders, how well he progresses.
There's no doubt. And, you know, you look at what they did in the selection process of Trubisky to get him. You know, they to use a Jim Fossil phrase, they pushed all their chips into the middle of the table, and they doubled down on getting Trubisky.
And were criticized.
Yeah, very, very much so. Now, different staff now, but same general manager that drafted Trubisky. So when that general manager is still in place, you can't help but think that with Nagy and the Andy Reid pedigree, you'd think that Trubisky's could be in line for a breakout year this year in the Windy City.
Well, think about all the talent they brought in offensively. My gosh. You know, Allen Robinson, Taylor Gabriel, Trey Burton, and they already had Tariq Cohen. You know, there's a lot of talent in that room.
Yeah, and the division is maybe not as tough as it was a few years ago. Some chinks in the armor for some of these teams. You got some changes at some of the other teams. But the Bears have been spinning their wheels, it seems like, for a generation to gain traction. And it's much documented about how their quarterbacks, it's a revolving door of futility, almost in line with the Cleveland Browns. So be really interesting, be really good for the NFL if Trubisky, Nagy, and company can be a force.
We kicked around an idea. Any of these coaches a one and done? Tough to really, I mean,
History says there is the chance of a one and done from the new hire. This crop, I think it would have to be something, an odd circumstance that would have to require a one and done. I just that's if you look at him, Steve Wilks with the Cardinals, that's pretty much a rebuilding job. They're unlikely to do that. We know that Gruden's going to be in it for the long haul. Vrabel, you know, that in their mind was a splashy hire. Patricia, the Ford family, do they come across as a one and done type?
I don't think so. But the interesting thing that I kind of think his history, you know, that backstory with the problems he's had.
Patricia may be the smartest guy in the NFL in terms of his, when you really research his background, in terms of what his, you know, being an engineer at Rensselaer Polytech and his degrees and things like that. I mean, you wonder, is he too smart to be in the NFL? You know, you root for some guys, but Patricia with the Unabomber beard and the hat on backwards and the pen sticking in the hat,
it's all facade.
It's definitely not an indication of brain power. You know, I mean, he looks like he's an extra from Duck Dynasty, yeah. And the reality is, he's, you know, he's a guy that could be very comfortable in NASA, you know.
Now, this is just, I could see, and again, I don't think this is going to happen. I could see Jim Irsay just, you know, if something goes wrong there, you know, with again, the pie on the egg on their face from the McDaniels thing, if he decides to get rid of Ballard, and, you know, I could see something possibly happening there, but I don't think Frank Reich will have a season where that's necessary, but definitely the Irsay's the wild card. That's more so what will the owner do more so than anything else.
Yeah, that's a good point, Cody. You would think that would, out of all of them, that would be the one to keep your eye on.
We were just talking in regards to the new hires, and was there any chances of any of them getting fired after one season? Brings us into a topic that is kind of interesting in terms of other coaches that are currently on that hot seat. And I did some digging. I came up with some of the Vegas odds on some of these coaches in the NFL. Believe it or not, number one in the hot seat at plus 125 on the money line here, Dirk Cutter from Tampa Bay, most likely to be fired first, followed by the Broncos' Vance Joseph. So that'd be a quick two-year exit for him at plus 200. Then he goes down to Adam Gase for the Dolphins, 2 years removed from a playoff spot. Then tied for fourth, the two Ohio guys, Hugh Jackson and Marvin Lewis, at plus 800. And then the odds really jump to a little bit higher odds. Jay Gruden at plus 1,500, followed by Jason Garrett at plus 2,000. And then we jump all the way to Bill O'Brien and Todd Bowles at plus 3,000. And then the field, if you had anybody other than those bunch of guys, the field, if you wanted to take the field, would be plus 1,500 for anybody else. My question to you guys, first off, is there anybody in that initial list that is a surprise to you in regards to where they are?
Well, you can't say that Dirk Cutter is a surprise, and it's nothing to do necessarily with Dirk Cutter, but when your starting quarterback is in the news for all the wrong reasons, and your backup quarterback is a journeyman, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Dirk Cutter probably was on the hot seat before Jameis Winston issues.
And it's the interesting.
The seat just got hotter.
It did, but you know, in the offseason, they made all these big free agent moves.
And they've been doing that, though. Yeah. That's the thing, and it doesn't pay off. Their defense is still atrocious. You know, and I think, you know, bringing in older veterans, you know, off the scrap heap, I don't know that that's the way to go. I think everybody there is just hoping to throw a Band-Aid on it to get themselves another year, and I don't know that that year is going to come. I mean, they flirted with John Gruden while they were inducting him into their Ring of Honor. I mean, it's, yeah, I think he's not a surprise at all.
The one that I found interesting or kind of surprising to me at first glance was Adam Gase at plus 650. In that third spot, granted, you know, not really having that solid quarterback is a big hole, though.
But it speaks to two things for me when you hear that with Gase. Number one, how fickle and how quickly the winds change in the NFL, especially in terms of head coaches. But what I would say, among that list that you listed, Reams, who is the one guy that's on the hot seat on that Vegas list that would be the most desirable for another team to hire? And I would say Adam Gase would be a...
True.
More so than
Bill O'Brien and Adam Gase. Those two guys would be at the top of the list. And if you look at a lot of those other names, a lot of those guys may not, and you always think, is this their last head coaching job? And I remember ESPN posed that question to Lewis Riddick when Jeff Fisher was let go in the Rams. And they said, does Jeff Fisher have another NFL head coaching job? And Riddick very quickly said, no. Adam Gase has another head coaching job in him. Bill O'Brien certainly does. In that list that you listed, is there another guy that's got a, that you know that this guy's got more life to him, or is it a bunch of guys that will be recycled as coordinators?
The only person I would say other might be Jay Gruden because of the name, but I don't. To me, you know, it's kind of he'd be a definite retread. I think it's name only.
I think he's definitely gonna get. He would get another shot. You know, a guy that I think might get another shot, but he might retire too. Would be Marvin Lewis. Like I feel like he's. he's done some things. You know, he's brought them up to. Remember, they were one of the biggest laughing stocks. I mean, they were the Browns before the Browns came back, and they've gotten to a level of mediocrity now where they're still making the playoffs. And you know, if Jeff Fisher can keep getting jobs, Marvin Lewis, I think, has done more than Jeff Fisher has in the more recent term.
Has anyone ever in the history of the NFL done more with less than Marvin Lewis in terms of a scouting department, a budget, an ownership group, facilities, a roster? Now, granted, he does seem to be a magnet to bring in the criminal element led by, you know, individuals like Vontaze Burfict, who, you know, is a walking NFL suspension and late hit. But
I feel like they have to.
That's my point. My point is, Marvin Lewis understands what the Bengals' recipe, and now he gets crushed for losing NFL playoff games and not winning them. The fact that he gets to the playoffs at all with that roster and that scouting department and those resources, Marvin Lewis, I agree with you. I don't think he wants to coach too much more. I think this is it for him, but I think of that list, simply because of success and their pedigree, you do think Adam Gase, Bill O'Brien, anybody else beyond that, it's a stretch.
Now, my big thing is Hugh Jackson has won, what, one game? One game with Cleveland, and he's not the guy that's on the hottest hot seat. Like, that blows my mind, especially with a new GM. You know, you're bringing in Todd Haley, who could conceivably take over, or, you know, Hugh Jackson, the offensive genius here, which did not look like an offensive genius last year. Again, personnel hurt that too. But, you know, they bring in Todd Haley, you know, an offensive guru to call the plays, and Hugh says, oh, it's his offense. You know, and Hugh already, he's fired a number of people on his staff. I mean, he's had multiple O-line coaches. He's had a second defensive coordinator, fired Ray Horton. He has Greg Williams. I mean, and look at how well that's worked out. Let's just camp Jabril Peppers 30 yards downfield and just hope that they don't get beat deep. Well, guess what? He still got beat deep, and they got beat underneath.
Well, out of those names that I mentioned, who do you put your money on to be fired first? I know who I'm going to pick.
I feel like the Vegas odds are right. I think Dirk Cutter, that's just going to be a mess. I think, you know, they're going to pin the, the Jameis Winston selection on him. They're going to, you know, kind of say Dirk Cutter's going first.
I put my money on Vance Joseph. I think it's an improved AFC West. I think the Chargers are going to be improved. I think, obviously, the Chiefs have, you know, plenty of talent. And obviously you're going to get that bump possibly with Gruden. I think you're looking at a Denver Broncos team that, you know, has coming off of, you know, a defense that is getting older, has lost Tlaib. You know, they're not getting any younger. And okay, they bring in the kid from Minnesota, the quarterback.
Case Keenum.
I think it's going to be difficult for him to run that offense. My money's on Vance Joseph getting axed first.
Here's my thing. Who should be on the hot seat more? Well, Vance Joseph definitely, but when does John Elway get on the hot seat? I mean, you know, great quarterback, but geez, I mean, look at the roster management of the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. I mean, it's just been going downhill, and I don't see him.
Has he found his quarterback? He seems like he keeps – that's the big question. He hasn't found him yet.
He hasn't found his offensive coordinator. He hasn't found his quarterback. It's a mess there in Denver.
I'd love to see, going back to Hugh Jackson and the Browns, because I find them fascinating simply because if you're 8-8 in the NFL, it's not interesting. You know, if you're 12-4, a lot of people are that. You know, when you're 0-16, that's hard to do in the NFL because only a handful of teams have done it. Wouldn't Hard Knocks with the Browns this year, Greg Williams, Hugh, Todd Haley?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
HBO? What are you waiting for, HBO? Get your cameras in there to Berea, Ohio, where the Browns training camp is, where I'm going to be close to in a couple days out for the IndyCar race. Get your cameras in there and get Greg Williams in the room with all those guys. I mean, that's gold.
I feel like the NFL doesn't want that.
is there anybody in the field though that you think could possibly be on the, be possibly axed?
Well, I don't know about axed, but what about move? You know, like, how long is Pete Carroll going to be with Seattle?
Yeah, I mean, and if they don't kind of start to rebound soon, you know, see Earl Thomas wants to be traded. He wants out. He said he's selling his house. He's getting out of there unless they give him a new deal. You know, and I think that it's an end of an era. I don't understand. You know, if you're rebuilding your entire defense, I don't understand why you keep Earl Thomas around. Why not trade him for some draft picks and, you know, get something for him and really revamp that defense? I think this is it's a bad move on their part in their planning that, you know, Russell Wilson's going to struggle here a little bit because he's going to have to put the team all on his shoulders. And I think in terms of his prime, they're not really setting the team up to be great in his prime and make the most of it.
Plus, and I was, to change gears, I was surprised that Jason Garrett's name wasn't higher on that list. Not that, just because he's been there as a head coach for seemingly nearly a decade. And that's that's an eternity in the NFL, especially with a combustible owner that is the general manager.
That's why he gets along with Jerry. That's probably a huge part of it.
Isn't he like the next in line to be Jeff Fisher? Like he's right around that 500, that 8-8, 7-9 range. You know, granted, he'll have a year where he's really good. He'll also have a year where they were way down when they drafted Zeke Elliott early in the NFL draft. But it seems like he's just steady right in the middle. And sooner or later, they need to do something. They need to make a change.
How about this name, Mike McCarthy? I mean, you know, Rodgers is coming back a little disgruntled, you know, not having any big say in terms of losing out Jordy Nelson. There's been rumblings that McCarthy might have been, you know, under a little bit of heat in the past.
It's amazing how Super Bowl rings insulate guys almost, you know, Sean Payton, McCarthy, Pete Carroll. It's a lot of job security, and generally they get to leave on their own terms. Green Bay, the only publicly owned franchise in the NFL, just reported their earnings 2 weeks ago. They are losing money. They're hemorrhaging money. Would the stockholders, i.e. the people that run the Packers, would they be pushing for that? Interesting scenario there.
Yeah, I could definitely see it happening because, you know, they've already gone through the defensive coordinator. They've gone through the offensive coordinator. A lot of the offensive staff has turned over. I mean, they're kind of running out of reasons for why they have only one Super Bowl win with Aaron Rodgers, you know, the greatest quarterback in the league right now. You know, again, in terms of being at the top. Now, Brady, obviously, career-wise, has done more. But, you know, you think of Aaron Rodgers as, you know, the best right now. So they're really not maximizing him.
I want to switch gears here real quick for you guys. You know, we started this podcast really based around a couple big debates we've had in the past. One of the things we've debated is Joe Montana versus John Elway, and you mentioned Elway earlier as a GM. One of the questions I want to ask you guys, what's the number one quarterback that you have seen in your own lifetime that you rooted for the most? Now, I'm not saying it's the best quarterback. It's just a quarterback you rooted for.
Wow.
I'll tell you. I'll give you my answer. My answer is Dan Marino. And I'll tell you the reason why I rooted for him probably the most. You know, he gets to the Super Bowl in his second year, comes up against arguably the best 49ers team that was in the Super Bowl in their history. And he always was going to return back to the Super Bowl. It was always going to be there. And granted, you know, whether it was a porous Miami defense was the case, or, you know, the 1 year when the Bears, in fact, it was his third year, Miami beat that Bears team in the regular season. And they were on their way to meet them in the Super Bowl, and they got tripped up by the Patriots, an overrated Tony Eason-led Patriots team. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is, you know, with Marino, you know, in terms of throwing the ball, in terms of the quick release, there was probably nobody better in terms of just straight throwing the ball. His, you know, he always took a hit, stood in the pocket. It's a guy I was always rooting for. So that's how I look at this question.
Reams, I'm seeing a parallel there. I'm seeing a parallel to your boy Carson Wentz. you know, went to the Super Bowl as the injured quarterback. Will he ever get back?
Oh, absolutely he'll get back. But, you know.
Mark that down.
But much different in the fact that Carson Wentz was much more nimble, much more of an athletic. I mean, Marino stood there, took all the hits.
Their styles are very different.
Very different.
I'm just saying in terms of that early, you know, getting to the Super Bowl, and obviously he didn't even get to play in it. I don't think he's getting back.
Oh, wait a second. You should know this. The Niners beat the Dolphins, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure. I don't think the Eagles lost this past one.
But what did Carson Wentz do? That was Nick Foles.
Seriously? Nick Foles would not have gotten there. Would not have gotten it. Nick Foles, if he had started the season as the starter, would not have won 11 games.
Well, just wait, because if Carson Wentz is rusty early on, there could be some controversy.
Okay, Troll, answer my question. Who would you root for?
Who would I root for? Or who did I root for?
No. In all of your lifetime, or in terms of whatever you've seen in terms of NFL history, what one quarterback have you rooted for the most?
Oh, man. That's tough. I might go with... I'll probably have to say, you know, growing up, I rooted a lot for Jeff Garcia. You know, as a Niners fan, you know, and again, I wouldn't say he's my favorite player. He was maddening at times, you know, a very good player, you know, a Pro Bowl caliber player that I don't think got the credit he deserves. You know, I liked Jeff Garcia as a player. I got frustrated when they would run up against the Packers. That was tough. You know, the Gravedigger would just like eat him up in the pocket all the time. Oh my God, Gilbert Brown, that guy gave me nightmares. But you know, Jeff Garcia, you know, he had to deal with the TO show. You know, and I think that, you know, he came from the CFL. What, you know, was at San Jose State before that. You know, and really an overlooked player. You know, granted, I don't really care for his commentary today, but I, as a player, I enjoyed watching that scrappy nature that the guy had. You know, went off to the Eagles, played well there, struggled with the Browns when he was there, struggled with the Lions, I believe he was there for a little bit, you know, but then went to Tampa, had a few decent years. You know, I really enjoyed watching Jeff Garcia.
The Philly fans loved Jeff Garcia when he was there.
He's scrappy.
Yeah,
absolutely. He's like the Rocky of NFL quarterbacks.
Yeah, I like the Garcia pick.
You're crushing my Marino.
No. It's funny because I was in the mid-80s, I remember the Bears were rolling, and Don Shula credit. He attacked Buddy Ryan's defense with a three-receiver set, spread him out, and was one of the first really coaches in the NFL to understand – instead of trying to pack it in versus the 46 defense, Shula decided we're going to trot more receivers onto the field and we're going to get the ball out and we're going to make some of those guys cover. And he protected Marino and he used Marino's quick release. Shula was much more of an innovator than I think a lot of people probably give him credit for. That was a huge landmark win. And it'd be interesting to see if they could have played the Bears in the Super Bowl a second time. That chess match between Buddy Ryan and Don Shula would have been fascinating to chronicle.
Yeah, it would have been great.
Because you would have had, okay, what's the adjustment? Where are the adjustments? Because Buddy Ryan, you know, he didn't have to adjust a lot because at halftime in those games, it was 28-0. Yeah. And then, you know, the other team had to throw it every down.
Yep.
You know, and the Bears would then just grind it to death with their running game and get Walter Payton some touches and...
You know, before you answer, Steve, one other thing I wanted to mention about Montana, I'm sorry, Marino, that was just...
You're talking about the GOAT, Montana.
Yeah, okay. I agree with you there. Anyway, with Marino, though, one of the things that people don't typically remember, and it's, you know, you see all these athletes now with their foundations. Marino actually was the first one to come up with his foundation for autism. I mean, it's just, it's a really huge thing. You look at Marino, you know, working for, I think it was NBC for many years. You know, everything he's done off the field, especially considering that he was drafted with a cloud of, you know,
kind of a party guy.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's funny, you know, I remember seeing an interview from Bill Frelick, his Pittsburgh roommate, totally discounting all of that.
Correct.
And yet, in that draft, which was, you know, a momentous,
people backed off of him because they had doubts about his character and his habits.
I mean, you think about it. you know, Ken O'Brien picked before him. It's just mind-boggling to see. You know, it's just crazy. But
Marino briefly considered and may have even done the job as the Dolphins' general manager, this may be almost a decade ago.
Yeah.
And
he wasn't right for him. He decided, I can't do this job correctly. And unlike Elway, you know, who's really, that's his identification now, Marino's going in a lot of different directions. My selection, I'm going to say Rich Gannon. And wing T quarterback out of Delaware, slightly undersized. One double A guy. I met him a few times. Probably maximized his NFL MVP. You know, Rich Gannon would, you know, bounced around with the Redskins and the Vikings before landing with the Raiders. And really, how many quarterbacks nowadays would you list that their third team they become NFL MVP? That's a damn short list.
Yeah, I mean, you think about these franchise quarterbacks, you have to nurture them. You have to bring them along. You don't see that often.
Rich Gannon was part of the Vikings roster among a quarterback depth chart that included Sean Salisbury.
One of the things, you said that doesn't really happen that often, but I don't think players are really even developed or given as many chances as they had been in the past. I think that, you know, certainly there are certain guys. You know, Sam Bradford, I think, is a guy that, you know, he's forever getting chances. But the injuries are there. I just don't think that guy, they're lining up. If a guy fails two times, I don't think they're lining up to give him another shot anymore.
You know, you bring in Bradford, though. They give him the second and third chance because of his throwing accuracy. You look at Gannon, though. That wasn't what he was known for.
Gannon was known for extending plays, toughness,
speed.
He was a hell of an athlete. But I think that was his calling card, why he was able to live in the league and survive, because, you know, when you're a guy that's getting recycled, number one, he didn't quit and he had an opportunity to go, and now he goes to the Raiders and they put a scheme around him that is based on delivering the ball relatively quickly in small windows and making quick decisions. And I kind of like Gannon as a broadcaster. I think my favorite broadcasters, for the most part, are not the top players. Not that Gannon wasn't a good player, but Gannon's probably, you know, he's not a Hall of Fame level player. Like, for example, a Jason Witten, who has now moved into the broadcast booth. But I like the Garcia pick. Marino, it's hard to root against Marino. You know, his autograph's very expensive. Gannon's is a little cheaper, but Gannon's is a little better, more easy to read.
You and your autographs, gotta love that.
Now we're going to take a look at the matchup no one wants to see. Jeff Fisher versus John Fox, not as coaches, but now they are NFL analysts and game announcers. Hecky, what do you think?
This may surprise people. I'm taking Jeff Fisher. I think Fisher has a second career if he decides that I'm really not going to get back into the NFL as a head coach. I think Fisher could become, I don't want to say the John Madden of his era because that's probably overstating things, but I think he could connect with fans and have enough simplicity in terms of scheme and the ability to communicate the game to the general audience, most people who don't know a lot. I don't know. Fox, last time I saw him on ESPN, he lacked a little bit of energy in the studio, kind of standing around, seemed like he was out of his element. I think Fisher would be a natural LA guy. It seems to have personality for it, and most of the TV people, you have to have a certain degree of gildedness about you, kind of a veneer. I think Fisher could pull it off. I don't think he would really complicate things for the audience. I think he would have enough personality that would be effective. Again, all prefaced by he's got to know that I'm not getting hired, because if he thinks he's still getting hired, he won't want to offend anybody.
Thinking of that, I mean, right away you think of Gruden. I mean, my gosh, he was so bland, and not necessarily bland, but he certainly wasn't, you know, going to bash anybody.
Johnny Sunshine, they used to call him. Because I don't know about this guy, but he's a great guy and even better person. You know, it just got old, the
shtick. And he never really gave you anything in terms of quality content.
No, well, you're right.
It's interesting. You said Fox and Jeff Fisher, two defensive guys. I find that interesting. You know, look at Rex Ryan. I mean, to me, I don't think he's really fulfilled what you actually thought he was. You would think he'd be bombastic.
Yeah, and that's kind of plays to my thesis about Fisher. People kind of see Fisher as in negative terms. I think the announcing booth may fit his skill set right now in his career more than maybe a head coach, because you don't have the volumes of preparation to do that maybe a head coach does running a program. But I think he's still close enough to the game where he has enough connections that would help in terms of knowing the personnel, knowing some of the schemes, knowing the people behind the scenes. I just think that if I had to take one of the two, I see Fisher's future brighter than Fox.
I'll tell you what I want to see. I want to see Jeff Fisher calling either a Rams game or a Broncos game. You know, those two quarterbacks, or even an Eagles game, you know, if Nick Foles is playing, because I want to see him talking about Nick Foles, Jared Goff, and Case Keenum all having a lot of success away from Jeff Fisher.
It'd be interesting to see if he has a sense of humor enough to have self-deprecating humor and poke fun at himself. And if he does, then he'll be a home run. If he doesn't, then he may be a dud.
You talk about self-deprecation. Right away, I think of the opposite end of that would be Joe Buck. I mean, there's a guy. I'm not necessarily a Joe Buck fan, but you think about Fox announcing. You know, we're coming off the U.S. Open, which to me, you look at the Fox coverage on that compared to right now British Open, where it's NBC.
ABC, ESPN, yeah. Golf Channel.
That's right. They got
everybody.
Faldo on there. Yep. A little bit more up our realm compared to the brutalness of Fox. Your thoughts on that?
Well, the big loss when the U.S. Open sold out and dropped NBC and went to Fox, the big loss to humanity was the loss of Johnny Miller's voice on a U.S. Open broadcast. Roger Maltby, Gary Koch.
Bikini Wax you're talking about there?
No, that was Gary McCord.
McCord, that's right, yeah. My bad.
Roger Maltby, who is a known character on the tour in terms of liking to party, but was a good player in his own right. Gary Koch, a great hole announcer, and they all knew how to kind of get out of the way. And they all kind of understood that it was Johnny's show, and you know, the hole by hole guy, who's Dan Hicks, I believe. Johnny had enough gravitas as a 1973 Open winner and a British Open champion that he could tell people that, hey, this guy choked.
Yeah,
that was not a hard shot.
Yeah,
okay,
was critical, absolutely.
He was very critical, and the players resented the hell out of it. But his job was, and still is, to call golf and to call it as he saw it. And Faldo, not quite in Johnny Miller's league, but the Fox broadcast is too much of a cartoon show. It's too much of a microphone in a hole. It's too much of, you know, it's too much, too many voices also. And the U.S. Open broadcast actually hurts the event for me, because I find myself not enjoying and embracing the event the way I used to. Like, it's not good when a broadcasting team, to me, impacts the event. And to me, they've done it. They've, you know, not to most people, but you can't beat Johnny Miller on Sunday, last four holes of the U.S. Open, coming down the stretch, waiting for him to say, ladies and gentlemen, he choked.
As the number of our six-star listeners increases, people are wondering, how do we get a hold of the Poolside Genius? How do we call in? How do we give you the information we want you to talk about? Well, the best way to do that is through the Anchor app. By having the Anchor app, you can easily click the message button and call in and give us any questions you might want to hear answered, any feedback on the show that you might want to give us, or anything else. It's the easiest, best way to be a part of the Poolside Genius show. Our very first listener call-in came in today from caller Jenks, and he has an interesting take on the Eagles quarterback dilemma.
Hey guys, it's Jenks. Enjoying the show. My question is for Reams. As an Eagles fan, I had a conversation with somebody not too long ago. We were talking about the possibility of assuming Carson Wentz is healthy enough to play week one. What happens if he struggles? With all the love that Nick Foles is getting from Eagles fans right now, and they still got him in town as a backup, what happens if Wentz comes out and the Eagles start 1-3, 2-4, all these post-Super Bowl expectations from the Philadelphia fans? Do we have a controversy, a quarterback controversy in Philly? Are they going to roll with Wentz no matter what? What do you think?
That's a really great question from Jenks. And it's a great question because there's so many layers to the question or to the situation that the Eagles find themselves in. What I would initially say is everybody expects the controversy to occur because Wentz is just a maniac right now in terms of his rehab, and he's expecting to start week one. But the interesting thing is, besides the fans and the media, Peterson's been kind of dodging the situation, because I don't think he really wants to put any added pressure into the situation, simply because you got to be able to see Wentz in, you know, right now he's only doing 7-on-7s. He's got to get up into 11-on-11 and get some live action in practice. I don't think he's going to be in any preseason games. But if it does play out where Wentz starts game one against the Falcons, and he struggles, because they're coming off the Super Bowl, the fan base, or a very large segment of the fan base, if he struggles, are certainly going to be possibly calling for Foles to step in.
Now, Reams, I just have a quick question on that. Do you think it would be better to start Wentz maybe game two or three, and then having him come in and looking rusty in game one right away? Like, do you think it would be better to hold him out, get him more practice reps, or what do you think would be better? What would be less divisive?
Well, let's put it this way. For the first game, you know, you're playing the Falcons. The Falcons are in regards to that playoff run, was probably the most interesting game out of Minnesota versus Atlanta. So Atlanta, you know, they could have easily beaten the Eagles, you know, minus the errant pass to Julio Jones at the very end. It's almost, and I'm not sure what the line is. I think the Eagles might be favored by a few points. You know, they're set up for a very difficult game, game one. The only good thing is the Eagles are very strong at home. So if you play Wentz and he struggles, yeah, you have a situation where you're going to have problems. But you're saying start Foles. Well, against the Falcons, what if Foles struggles? Now you have to bring in Wentz, or, you know, you're playing somebody that's rusty, coming off a major injury. You're talking about Foles, who caught lightning in a bottle last year.
Yeah, but in terms of the overall team dynamic and the fans, if Foles struggles, that sets it up for Wentz to come in and Wentz to be Wentz, because, you know what, you expect if Wentz is going to struggle a little bit, you know, that might happen. But if Foles struggles, then it puts that to rest. It puts that to bed, and the divisiveness is kind of mitigated in that respect.
But what if Foles does really well? Then the question is, do you ride Foles or do you come back with Wentz? Face it, Wentz is the man. And you mentioned, you know, the fans and the team dynamics. They're two different entities. The fans, I mean, come on, put them out of the equation. You're talking about a team that's very together. I don't think, and they're very together because, you know, they know who their leader is. And even Foles says it. Their leader is Wentz. Compare Wentz to Foles. You're talking Foles in his career, 60 touchdowns to 30 interceptions. You're looking last year at Wentz, who had 33 touchdowns to 7 interceptions in 13 games. After game 13, or in that going into that Rams game, you're looking at probably the MVP of the NFL last year. He comes back, okay, yeah, he might be rusty. But the other thing to keep in mind, after that Atlanta game, you're dealing with Tampa Bay, the Indianapolis Colts, and the Titans. That September schedule after that Atlanta game is not necessarily scattered with major defenses. So to me, I'm thinking, you know, you should start Wentz. I think you get over that hump of the first game, get the rustiness out. Okay, even if you lose that game one,
you're looking at three games that you can do very well.
So you're saying that there's no controversy in Philly?
Oh, there'll be a controversy. There'll be a controversy from a segment of the fans that are going to be just, you know, still in that honeymoon, still bowing down to Nick Foles. But if you're truly looking at this situation and comparing the quarterbacks, it's a no-brainer. Wentz is the franchise for a reason. He's the better quarterback.
And, you know, this kind of reminds me many years ago, you know, that 98 Vikings team when Brad Johnson, the young gun, gets hurt and Randall Cunningham comes in and leads them to a great offensive season. And then the Vikings trade Brad Johnson in, Randall Cunningham comes back to earth. And, you know, I think that's the danger of going with Foles, is that, you know, that would come back down to earth and they'd be in a little bit of trouble. So, yeah, I think it's definitely you go with Wentz. As long as he is 100% healthy, you don't want to put him out there at 75, 80%. You want him to be fully healthy, and you want to get him out there.
And Peterson has said that. He has said he's going to rely on the doctors, but it's going to be a joint decision between this coaching staff, the doctors. And, of course, Wentz is going to be, you know, trying to get in there as soon as yesterday he would have been in there. And, of course, you know, his progress has been, you know, documented that it's pretty much outstanding. Will there be a setback? Will he be a little bit rusty? It's all part of the game. It's just, I think he's the man, and you gotta go with him.
Thanks again for listening to the Poolside Genius Podcast. Don't miss out on spending time poolside, so subscribe using iTunes, Stitcher, or any other major podcast platforms. While you are subscribing, we appreciate any feedback and 5-star reviews.
Remember, when you're poolside, always dive in the deep end.
Splash.